and welcome back. And I mean welcome back, Frosty. Frosty has been a friend of mine, a friend of yours, who has been contributing mightily on this program and to the world for over 20 years since he really began pushing his message. His message is of reality. His message is one of truth, of what's really happening out there, not what we wish was happening or what we are told is happening. It's what we see and we can process as being real. Frosty takes several months off every year to get out, exercise his legs, his consciousness, his spirit, and he goes on long rides, whether they're bicycle or bikes. And he has just gotten back now from a great trip to Alaska and other things as well. And you've got a huge following out here, Frosty, and they're really glad to hear you. So welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff, and really a pleasure. And just a hearty hello to all of America, all of Canada, and around the world. Hopefully, Jeff and I bring, each time we talk, a sane, rational, reasoned conversation to each one of you, and certainly so that you can share that with everyone else. And the key here is that we enlighten each other. And right now, I did 10,000 miles this summer from Denver all the way to Alaska, the Arctic Circle, had to sit on the top of the world highway, which is a highway from Dawson City, Yukon, all the way over to Tok Junction, and had to wait for a couple hundred caribou to cross the road in front of me. You know, it's like you're on the Nature Channel, and you're right in the middle of a caribou herd, and you just go, oh, my gosh. And then you go a little further down the road, and there's a grizzly with a couple of mama grizzly with a couple bear cubs off in the bush, you know, chewing on the berries. And then, of course, you get to pass through the Glacier Highway and get to see the Bear Glacier and the largest inland glacier in North America, which is called the Salmon Glacier there in Hyder, Alaska. And then to be able to walk into Jack London's cabin there in Dawson City from the 1897-98 gold rush, where 30,000 miners came up there to dig for gold. Well, guess what? They're still digging for gold, and there's still old miners, and the dirts are in Dawson City, dirt roads and boardwalks, and hasn't changed much. And they have the Diamond Tooth Curdy's bar with the dancing girls. And so, yeah, just an amazing adventure. And then after coming back from that, another 8,000 miles of travel around the United States. And so that, also gave me a whole nother perspective. And for those of you who appreciate what I bring, I've got a three-part series. It might be a four-part series on rinse at my category. America's growing nightmare. You can't believe it until you see it. And then when you see it, you can't believe it. And then the other the other piece that I wrote is part about two. America's growing nightmare, part two. Yeah. And that's what America is becoming if we stay on this path. And then part three, I'm still doing the research on it. But what I want to do is really...
Those two parts are going up momentarily. They will also be in Frosty's columnist section on the left-hand side as well.
Yeah.
Now, all right, question. You're doing 65 on the highway, 75, whatever. Yeah. And the caribou are behind you, and you're getting up toward the grizzly. And the grizzlies hear you coming. And they don't necessarily always maybe like the sound of motorcycles. What happens if a grizzly starts running perpendicular to you as you're going straight up the road from your right toward the road? What do you do?
Well, first of all, when you're on the top of the World Highway or in any of the highways in the Yukon Territory or certainly in Alaska, you're going 25 to 35 miles an hour in the gravel because you face potholes.
Oh, it's not paved.
Not paved at all. The Dempster Highway is unpaved for 500 miles, and that's the one that crosses the Arctic Circle and goes all the way up to the Arctic Ocean. The Dalton Highway, and I've been on both of them. I did stories on them for several motorcycle magazines over the past You go up to the Arctic Circle, then you go onto the the Arctic Ocean. You don't go fast. You go 25. Maybe 30, because there's potholes, there's corrugation.
Oh, of course. I didn't know it was in that condition.
You've got sand washouts, you hit some soft gravel, and you over on your ass. And I can tell you this, when I was up on the Dempster, three people died on it. Three people died. They went too fast, and they...
Bikes?
Bikes. Well, and actually... There was one bicyclist that was going up on the Dempster, and this guy got in between a van, and he got caught in the dust of the van that went by him, and the other car coming the other way, which is almost extremely rare, the other car didn't see him and head on to the bicyclist and killed the bicyclist. But two other, so anyway, three people died while I was up there on the Dempster. And so...
Do you run into many other bikers up there? I mean, talking about motorcycles.
Yeah, motorcycles, back in 1980, I did a story which was the most read for Rider Magazine. It was called The Arctic Circle and Beyond. And my brother Rex and my friend Lance from Australia were the first three characters to get motorcycles up crossing the Arctic Circle on the Dempster, because it had just opened up all the way to Inuvik, and that, you have to even bring extra gas with you just to get your bikes from Dawson City all the way to the midpoint, Eagle Plains.
That is wild.
Totally wild. And we're talking wilderness. We're talking grizzlies. We're talking caribou. We're talking elk. We're talking wolves. We're talking wildness like very few people ever get to see down in the southern in Canada or even in America. That land up there is wild, and very few human beings. And so it was, and continues to be. And my first went up there in 1974. And to this day, it's just as wild as it ever was. We got to see the front side of Denali, which is now, used to be called Mount McKinley. But now it's called Mount Denali and Denali National Park. And I got to see that in the front, and then went to the backside on the Denali Highway to see the backside. And it's an impressive mountain. I remember one time when we were camped out by Wonder Lake Campground. And in fact, I had a two-page color spread that was published in the Rider magazine. I had a shot of a moose in the Wonder Lake right there, and then a reflection in the morning of Denali. Two-page color spread. It was absolutely out of this world. And somebody jumped out of their tent, and they screamed. And it was one of those clear, crystal-clear days up there on the Arctic tundra. And they said, "My God, it fills the sky." And I can say without a doubt, of all the places I've traveled on the planet, if you get around Mount Everest, you've got Dalagiri at 26, you've got K2 that's almost as tall as Everest, and Everest is at 29,035 feet, I think. And Denali is 20,320 feet, but it's all by itself. So it vertically it stands higher in the sky with nothing to come close to it. So it does.
Was that a volcano at one point long ago? Is that where it came from?
Yeah, no, it wasn't a volcano. It was just a giant mountain that got uplifted, essentially like the Rocky Mountains, block folded, I guess. And so, and that whole range there, it's all part of the mountain range of squished up mountains, block folded, that created the Continental Divide that runs all the way south through Canada and then through America all the way down to the, in fact, it gets down, because I've bicycled the Continental Divide four times now, and you can go over 12,000 foot passes, and then of course some of the mountain peaks are 14,000 footers, and then you get down to the border in Mexico by Pancho Villa State Park there, and it's down to 2,000 feet. So just a dramatic mountain range. And as a matter of fact, I'm reading John Colton right now. I mean, John Coulter. He was one of the mountain men there, like Jim Bridger. And he was on the expedition of Lewis and Clark. And the things they did in that, what they survived. For anyone who wants to literally relive the Lewis and Clark story, one of the most epic adventures, expeditions in the history of the world, besides Shackleton down in Antarctica, is called The Undaunted Courage. I think it's by Ambrose. Just look up Undaunted Courage. You cannot believe these people survived. As a matter of fact, my plans are next summer to bicycle the Lewis and Clark Trail from St. Charles on the Missouri, 4,200 miles all the way to Astoria, Oregon, and end up at Fort Clapsett, where they built a fort within 2 weeks, and they stayed there for, I think, 5 months during this winter of 1805 to 1806 before they went back, you know, back up to Columbia and then up on the Clearwater, then up over Lolo Pass and then back down onto the Missouri River. And they also they split up and got onto the Yellowstone River. But what I'm going to do is take Sergeant Ordway's journal and Patrick Gass's journal and the Undaunted Courage story and just take quotes of their observations from 1804 to 1806 and put them into the book, and then my own observations 200-odd years later. It should make for an incredible bicycle adventure historical book, and so I'm pretty excited about doing that.
That's very nice. What a fun thing. Are there many remnants that show that Lewis and Clark were there? Did they make little monuments along the way? They're still there?
No,
how do you follow the trail?
One place where, I think it was William Clark. Or no, I think it was Clark. He did carve into a tree. I think it was a maple tree, and it's still alive. And he carved his name and circled it. William Clark. I think it was, I forget which date it was, but it was 1805, and he did, he carved it into the tree, and it's still there. So, yeah, that's about the only one that I know of. They had caches along the way that they had to, you know, they'd dig up and so forth when they came back. But they, Lewis and Clark were really excellent map makers and certainly explorers, and the men that were with them were like present-day, you know, Navy SEALs. These guys were hardcore, I can tell you. They were hardcore. And John Coulter, for those of you who would like to read about him, just get the book, John Coulter, and I forget the name of the author. But, man, reading about these guys, they were just hardcore wilderness men, and they're the ones that, you know, did their lives and created the legends, and they were everything. They really fulfilled the legends, and it's just astounding. Just like Jack London. I mean, Jack London, and one of the greatest writers of early America and the most successful commercial writer ever to start off, you know, when he did White Fang and Captain Larsen. He did Call of the Wild, which everyone needs to read that one. But to walk inside his cabin, I got to walk inside the cabin. This is the first time I'd been able to do that. And also Robert Service, who was the poet of the Yukon.
In fact, he was a professor at UC Santa Barbara when I was there. Yeah, I think he passed away there in Santa Barbara. Robert Service.
You know, he very well could have. I don't. He did he? Nah, that might have been another Robert Service. Robert Service lived from, I think, about, he was about 25 back in 18. Yeah, he wasn't the same Robert Service, because he was around 25. He was a teller at the bank on the Yukon River in 1897, so I doubt that he made it to the 1950s or 60s.
No, I'm not seeing it here.
Yeah.
I don't see it, but I do remember somebody named Robert W. Service at UC. And here, hold on.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the Robert Service that wrote The Spell of the Yukon.
British Canadian poet and writer, often called the Bard of the Yukon.
Okay, and
Robert
when did
W.
he die?
Service.
Yeah.
He died in 1958.
Oh my gosh!
I wasn't
so
there
he lived
then.
A very long life.
I remember his. No, no, they talked about him. He was gone when I was there, but he was there in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, there's one. This is no kidding. This is how I got to go to his cabin, and then he opened it up for me. Uh-huh. I was on the Yukon River, and there's a bank there, and it's a skeleton of a bank. It should be a National Heritage Site, but there was a plaque that said this is where Robert Service was a bank teller, and he. This is where he wrote all of his, you know, Spell of the Yukon, the shooting of Dan McGrew, the cremation of Sam McGee, you name it. And the guy came up to me, and here I am, you know, in my motorcycle outfit, my leathers and my jacket, yeah. And just keeping myself warm. And he says, well, do you know much about Robert Service? And I said, yeah, the summer no sweeter was ever, the sunshiny woods all athrill, the grayling aleap in the river, the bighorn asleep on the hill. It's that big, broad land way up yonder. It's the forest where silence has lease. It's the beauty that fills me with wonder. It's the stillness that fills me with peace. It's the strong life that never knows harness. It's the wilds where the caribou call. It's the freshness, the freedom, the farness. Oh, God, how I'm stuck on it all. This guy said, I have never, ever heard anyone that could recite Robert Service's poem.
No.
Yeah, from the Spell of Yukon. He says, well, you've been to his cabin. And, you know, because he was astounded. Nobody could recite Robert Service. He'd never heard anybody. But I love Robert Service, and I love poetry. Yeah. And he says, well, have you been to his cabin? And I said, no. You know, and I'd been up there since 1974. I'd gone through, you know, Yukon, and I've gone up to Dawson City. And he says, well, it's on 8th Street. And then there's also Jack London's cabins there. And I said, no kidding. So, boy, I just got in the saddle and went onto 8th Street there. And sure enough, and Dozen was there. There's a little museum, and they unlocked the doors, and my brother Rex and I stepped inside, and we stepped inside at two of some of the biggest heroes of the 1897-1898. And of course, Jack London was one of the great writers out there who inspired me for sure. And wow, we got to see the little museum, and we got to be inside,
oh, nice.
Took pictures. It was
oh,
fantastic.
Nice.
Is that wild?
I'm looking at a picture of it's wild. I'm looking at a picture of it right now.
Yeah,
little cabin, little modest cabin.
Oh yeah, 100 square feet at the most.
Yeah.
And the other cabin was about maybe 400 square feet. Yeah, Robert Service's cabin, he actually had a bedroom in the back, whereas Jack London just had one room, uh-huh. about 100 square feet, with a pot-belly stove, a desk, a chair, and then a bed, and that was it. Pots and pans.
Wow.
Hey, those guys lived a rough, tough, mean life. You know, it's 50 below zero up there in the winter. 50 below zero.
No thanks.
Yeah.
This is real pretty.
Gold.
It's got beautiful flowers, and they're kind of blue. They look like lupins, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of steps. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
yep.
6, 7, 8 steps
up
to the top.
Yeah, they're all wood steps. Yep, there's wood steps, yep.
And then 8 below that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, very
pretty
nice.
Pretty phenomenal. I mean, and those are all hand-hewn cabins. And then, of course, they always had the big food cellars that they stuck up on stilts, and then they'd put metal around the legs so that the bears couldn't crawl, and nothing, you know, the raccoons couldn't crawl up them. That's how they stored their food. Otherwise, the grizzlies would literally tear into the cabins and kill the inhabitants and eat all the food and eat the inhabitant, too.
Yeah.
We're talking hardcore, hard living back then.
I would have loved to have been able to be there and see you recite that. And that guy's face must have just been stunned.
Oh,
stunned.
Yeah, he was absolutely stunned. He'd never seen any tourist, uh-huh. visitor ever recite any of Robert Service. I could give you another one that just blew me away. 20 years ago, I canoed down the Mississippi River from Lake Itasca, where it's about 12 inches deep and 5 feet wide when it starts out. And within 2 weeks of going down the river, past Lake Itasca, and we're going, it's like 600 miles in Minnesota alone, it goes 2,552 miles in New Orleans, and usually about 20, 30 canoeists will canoe the Mississippi River every summer. And then it's got a 1,735-foot drop, from, you know, vertical drop. And it, but it only goes 1.5 miles an hour. So you really just, you got to paddle hard to get down the Mississippi River. And so anyway, there were two brothers. One was 78, one was 76. And my buddy and I, who were, you know, we had two separate canoes. These guys had a single canoe, and they were going faster than us, but we got to camp out with them. And again, one was 78, one was 76. Both their wives had passed away, and they wanted to fulfill boyhood dreams of canoeing the Mississippi top to bottom. And so we sat around the campfire that night, and the one brother said, "Have you ever heard of Robert Service?" And I said, "Sure have. Got all his books." And he said, "Well, have you ever heard of The Cremation of Sam McGee?" "Sure have. Read read the whole thing, you know." And it's got like 40 stanzas. 40 stanzas. I mean, close to 40, maybe 35.
You didn't memorize all that.
I sat there by the campfire, and at the age of 76, this guy recited the entire Cremation of Sam McGee verbatim without making one single mistake.
Astonishing.
Oh,
and you run into the most amazing people, Frosty. You always do.
Here's another one. So I get to the old car museum up there in, after Tok Junction. And it was a 1949 Packard, and they called that car a living room on wheels. We're talking about opulence way beyond whatever you can imagine. So anyway, that day it was pretty hot, and so I went into the museum and I had my T-shirt on, and it said the Arctic Circle Norway to Athens, Greece, which was one of the bicycle rides I'd done way back in 2005, and that was a $4,500-mile-long journey from the Arctic Circle, from the Arctic Ocean in Nordkap, Norway, down to Athens, Greece. And the guy says, "So you bicycle?" I said, "Yeah, I bicycled from Vancouver all the way to, St. John's in Newfoundland." "So you know the Newfies?" And I said, "Yeah, the Newfies, yeah, quite a group in Newfoundland." That's what they call them, Newfies. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Well, mate," he says, "I got to tell you, I walked across Canada, 4,500 miles, and I did the same trip that you did on the same route." I said, "Man, I bow to you. You're fantastic." He says, "And the next year," and he's my age, "he unicycled across Canada."
Come on.
He unicycled. You know how fast you go on a unicycle?
No.
5-6 miles an hour, going
maybe
up a mountain, what it takes to be on a unicycle with a 35-pound pack on your back.
That's major motion picture stuff. That's wild.
Totally. Because, as a matter of fact, in 2019 when I was going, or no, 2013 when I was going from Canada to Mexico on the Continental Divide, I got up, I was coming into Wyoming on route 827 or 237. I can't remember which road it is. It goes into Du Bois, and then it goes into the Grand Tetons. Who do I meet? Some kid, maybe 27 or 8. He's unicycling down the Continental Divide from Canada to Mexico, and he had a 35-pound pack on. And we sat around the campfire that night. I'm sitting there going, I'm a hardcore cyclist, but when you're on a unicycle, you're twice the cyclist.
Isn't it? That's got to be twice as hard to pedal, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. There's no gearing on it.
Uh-huh.
There's no gearing, and you have to balance, of course. If anybody's ever tried to balance on a U-cycle, it takes quite a while to get to where you're good at it. But to have a 35-pound pack on your back and unicycle down the road and then unicycle up mountain passes, we're talking a whole new ball game here, folks. And I'm not worthy. I've got 21 gears on my mountain bike, and that gets me up and down mountains, and I'm going to stick with that mode of travel. Unicycle is a little out of my category.
That's really hard to believe. That's amazing.
Totally amazing. Yeah, he was. But and he had already done across America. He'd ridden a unicycle across America. Uh-huh. I also met a guy years back that who ran across America kicking a soccer ball. Yeah. He kicked a soccer ball across America, coast to coast. He kicked a soccer ball.
Ripley's, believe it or not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've met some characters out there. I've met some characters out there. And they, you know, I met one gal. She came right to Colorado. She walked across America and for the Shriners Club. And she raised over $100,000. And the reason she did it was because her cousin was saved by the Shriners. And, mm-hmm. and so she thought it was worthwhile. And she was only like 35 years old, pretty blonde, actually, pretty blonde. She only had, she had a backpack, but she rolled it on a little scooter, a little, you know, and she had to push it. But it was a three-wheeled backpack holder, and that's how she walked across America. So, yeah. And then she was so inspired that she then, a year or two or 3 years later, she walked across Africa in order to raise money to get fresh water pumped in wells across Africa. And she raised thousands and thousands of dollars for that because she had quite a following. So, yeah, there's people out there in the world doing
good things.
That
was before social media, right? Can you imagine if she was on social media now, putting in a report every day with images and pictures?
Oh.
That's what it would be like now.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that is there's another two surfers got to see a bunch of plastic. And, of course, I've been a scuba diver my whole life, and I got to see the oceans go from pristine and just nothing but wrecks to now 170 trillion pieces of plastic in all of our oceans. It's down in the Mariana Trench now. There's plastic bottles down there.
170 trillion pieces of plastic. And
yeah,
more and more data.
NPR.
Yeah, more and more data is coming out now about microplastics.
Yep.
And the
getting
damage
the
it's
fish.
Doing to the human body. Oh, yes, that too. But
petroleum.
Human body, it's polluting the planet. And it could end up killing off most of the people. There's another genocidal aspect to this.
That's very true.
Oh, and I got to get this Robert Service thing. I think what's going on at UC Santa Barbara, I think at the library there, it's a big library, I think they have a lot of Service's original works. Handwritten stuff, letters. I think that's what the deal is. I'm trying to look it up here in the background while you're talking. But he was not on the faculty there. Did he visit there? I don't know. But there's something to do with the UC Santa Barbara Library and Robert W. Service. And I believe they've archived a lot of his original works there.
Well, as a matter of fact, and for those of you who are out there that are struggling with life or you want to be a writer or an artist or a painter or a macrame artist or you're a very creative person, in Robert Service's cabin, he says, every time you're shuttered, your failures lead to your success. I got a picture of it. So he was like any other writer way back in 1897.
Got it.
You know, you keep submitting your work and you keep getting rejection slips, which I got a wall plastered with rejection slips. And yet he said, every time you fail, you're shuttered. He said that means you get a rejection slip is you're shuttered.
Mm-hmm.
It leads to your success as long as you don't give up. And so, yeah.
What an attitude. They don't make people like that anymore. I shouldn't say that because I consider you in that very same mold of people. Very rare, extraordinary people. And a lot of people do, Frosty. You have a worldwide base of fans out there that just love hearing these stories. Maybe the next time you make a trip. I hate cell phones, but if you want to document it, you know, you might do it on X or something. I don't know. Just do a daily entry with some pictures and take people along with you.
Well, I'm actually, I had a girl. She's 28 years old. Her name is Emery Sharplin. She visited us here, and she's from the University of Austin. And she backpacked the Appalachian Trail, 2,175 miles. And I've backpacked a lot of the Appalachian Trail myself. And anyway, we hit it off. And what does she do for a living? She teaches skydivers, and she's a skydiving nut. Anyway, she's so cool and so much fun that I invite. And she did she's got a three-part series on YouTube called, her trail name was 10 More, or 10 More Miles. I think it was 10 more miles by Emery Sharplin. And it's a 3-hour, 1 hour each of her travels on the Appalachia Trail. I highly recommend anyone and everyone to go to the YouTube and jump into that 10 more. It's either 10 more or 10 more miles. That was her trail name. And you'll see how she backpacked the Appalachia Trail and all the things that happened on it. So I then invited her on the Lewis and Clark ride in 2025. And she'll be the Sacagawea, if you will. And I said I'd help her write a book. And I would help her also. And I said, come on and do a video of the whole of the ride.
Got it. Good
You'll
idea.
Inspire all of these women out there, and
yes.
Your book will be fantastic. I'll help you edit it. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, she's going to come on this ride with me, and so that's going to be a lot of fun. So, and I might even do my own video of the entire ride, because on a bicycle, you've got time. On a motorcycle, things are going too fast.
You got to pay attention.
But on a bicycle, it's much more down to earth, and you feel the land more, and you see, and you understand, and you appreciate more. And so that's going to be an incredible journey, and I think Emery Sharplin is going to make a tremendous contribution. I love seeing women out there doing really fantastic adventures, because mm-hmm. each woman that does that inspires more and more women, and that to me is the most important part of bringing women into the world and world into life with the female touch.
Gotcha.
And of course I love Nellie Bly was incredible, Molly Brown. You look at all the women, and I've celebrated many, many women over the years, the ones that I've met along the way, but also the ones way back when, mm-hmm. because they are the benchmark. Whether it's Jane Goodall or Diane Fossey, you can go right on down the line. These women are extraordinary. I mean, Amelia Earhart. I mean, how do you beat Amelia Earhart? And
right.
So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun, and I think it's going to be some really big and fun stuff come out of next summer. Also, for those of you who appreciate our oceans, then that we're losing them fast, I highly recommend to go to the number four ocean, OCEAN, 4ocean.com, and pitch in $10 and buy a bracelet. Those two surfer boys started it about 10 years ago. I keep mm-hmm. supporting them. I buy their hats and I buy their bracelets. And they are now, I think, in 35 countries, and I think they've picked up about 100, I'm not sure, 100 million pounds. I think it's 100 million pounds. You'll find out on their website, 4ocean.com. But support them, because I think they're in 35 countries right now.
Good for them. Very nice.
So,
now, you mentioned you pronounced it differently, probably correctly, but I didn't want that to go by people. The woman, we're talking Lewis and Clark in the beginning, and we used to hear it as Sacagawea. But I don't know. You said something else, but I knew what you were saying. That's it.
And I actually got the correction there at the fort, which I was there 2 years ago, Fort uh-huh. Clapsett, where they wintered, and the lady said, "Yeah, it was Sacagawea."
Interesting.
Yeah, that was
all
the
right,
Indian
well,
pronunciation. Oh, and I visited her grave in Fort Washakie, there in Wyoming.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, and that route going up there to Du Bois, 287, Route 287, and that's where you'll see Thunder Jack right out of Walsall in Montana, and he's a mountain man. And I'm right in front of him there, and I actually visited him again this summer. He's a mountain man, and he's waving his hand. He's on top of Walsall. I think it's Walsill. I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, there's some amazing people out there, and they're doing good things in the world. In fact, just this last week, I was picking up trash along I-70. And, in fact, Sandy and I were picking up trash after we had come back from I forget what it was. But anyway, so we have two bags, and we're picking up trash along the highway on exit 256. And there was two bags of trash there because we hadn't been there for a while. This is no kidding. A guy stopped his car, and he says, "Do you have any more trash cans or trash bags?" I said, "Sure do, sir." And then he started picking up with us, and he came up to me and he says, "You and your wife, you're the light workers of the world. You literally you spread your light, and you inspire the rest of us." And I had no idea that he was inspired to pick up trash with us. I mean, think about it.
Frosty, your impact on the world and countless people is something you'll probably never realize, but it's huge. You've changed lives just by the simple picking up trash. Inspired somebody. Think about that. That man will never forget that. He'll probably continue doing it. So
he may lead by example, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's true. And the thing is, one of the things my dad always told me, you know, you leave a place nicer than you found it, you'll be really proud of yourself. You know, and most people think, well, picking up trash, it's redundant, it's boring, it's whatever it is. And yet when you leave a beautiful, a wilderness scene nicer and cleaner and back into the wilderness than you found it with all the trash. And I can tell you, probably somewhere around 10% of Americans just flagrantly toss their trash anywhere and everywhere in the wilderness.
It is disgusting.
But when I go into some place and I pick up all that trash and I leave that campsite clean, or I leave the roadside clean, or I leave the river cleaner, because I've organized big river pickups here in Colorado. And I told you, I think it was last year, Chad Greg Reiki, you know, livinglandsandwaters.com, he cleaned up the entire Mississippi River.
Mississippi, that's hard to believe.
He did. livinglandsandwaters.com. You know, talk about somebody to inspire you. And so he's left the entire Mississippi River cleaner and cleaned and literally came. I think he's well over 100,000 bags of trash tractors and cars and barrels.
Yeah, you told us about this. They were dragging dead cars out of the river. All kinds of things were being pulled out.
Tractors, cars.
And locals would help him, I think. He would ask locals to help.
Yeah, 6,000 volunteers. 6,000 volunteers. Yeah.
So you said something,
people out there in the world.
Yeah, you said something that's very important. And I'm no Frosty Wooldridge, but I have always tried to do this. Whatever I do and wherever I go, which I don't go many places at all anymore, but I do try to leave behind something that makes things a little better than they were when I got there. Somehow, whatever it is. I mean, even if you open a door for somebody, an older lady, an older man, hold the door, that makes a difference. People dismiss it as being meaningless. It's not. Try to always leave things in better condition than when you first arrived or when you passed through. Somehow, just little things. If everybody did that, what a difference. So thanks for bringing that up.
Oh, you're most welcome. You know, and one of the things that I do is verbal compliments. You know, that cashier that's doing the same job 8 hours a day at King Soopers or Safeways or Kroger or, you know, Publix or whatever, if you just notice that she has on a beautiful ring, or she has a beautiful necklace, or she has some kind of sparkle, or she has a bright smile, and you make a comment about that, you've just brightened their day and you've brought some light into their life. And so my wife and I do that all the time. As a matter of fact, before I left on this trip this summer, the lady, her name is Nancy Cooper, and she was running the Buchanan Rec Center. And I mean, she works 70 hours a week. And all I did was, take one of my Spirit of Adventure greeting cards, and I sent it to her. Or I left it at the front desk when I took off. Her husband came up to me today. He said, "Frosty, that card and what you wrote on that card to my wife just meant the world to her." And she was so thrilled that somebody appreciated her work. And so we can all do that, a verbal compliment, a little card in the mail, a little thank you here and there. You better believe it. That kind of positive energy reverberates, you know, across the world, because then that person does the same thing down the line.
Yes.
And for those of you I've actually, for the last year and a half, I've been writing for Colorado Serenity magazine. And it's, you can go to coloradoserenity.com. Now, all of these pieces that I've written for the last 18 months are also on my category there on Spirit of Adventure at Rents. But they've been taking the editor has been taking these vignettes that I write, the little 1,000-word vignettes, and she's been publishing it, and they're going all over the world. And
whoop, well, we'll get him back. All right, these dropouts are annoying, but that's what they're supposed to be, annoying. And it's true, when you are out and about, and if you simply stop thinking about you within, your energy is all directed within, relating to the world around you, of course. If you turn that energy out and just look around you and see something positive that you can make a compliment about, tell somebody. That's nice. This is that. It's so easy to do. It's reversing your energy flow from within to without, to look around you, to notice things, and to try to make a little difference. Go ahead, Frosty.
Yes, and, you know, in the end, I think each of us wants to have, I guess, a reputation of our life, if you will, a good, decent, kind life where we treated everyone like we wanted to be treated. You know, and some
the
of
golden
us get
rule.
To live.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can do it verbally. You can do. In fact, every Christmas, Sandy and I go around, look at all the Christmas decorations, and we send out 10 cards, and we say on the cards, "You get first place for your fantastic Christmas decorations," and then in the summer we. When the ones that have the great flower gardens and they present all the flower pots, we write, your flower pots make our day every time we drive past on a bicycle or we walk, and they don't even know who it is. We don't even tell them. And then when they have a big sign in the front yard, our graduate, John Becker. Well, guess what? I have a 2-page letter that I write. You know, congratulations, John. These are your neighbors, and I want to share with you what life's going to be about, and here's some of the things I said, and I literally say, life's coming at you, and you get to make your life as you wish, and I said, like, sometimes you're going to be lied to, you're going to be betrayed, you're going to be cheated. I said, how do you answer those kinds of things with those kinds of people? You answer with honor and integrity. You stop the anger, you stop the hate, you stop all the bad things in life by your choices of integrity and honor and decency. And I'm sure the parents sit there and they're stunned because we just say, at the end of the letter, we just say, we're your neighbors and we're very proud of you. And so anyway, for me, I'm thrilled that I could write a letter like that and send that
it's
to a
fun.
High school.
It's a joyful thing to do. I understand what you're saying.
Really, it really is. And in the end, when you do something good, you feel better, the other person feels better, and the world feels better.
Right.
Yeah, it really does. And so, yeah,
right.
Whether it's Robert Service or it's Diane Fossey or it's any and all of the different individuals in this life, the one thing you have to appreciate is everybody is on their path and everybody's got their struggles. In fact, this latest piece that I wrote, The Illusion of Judgment, and it's this month. If you go to Serenity magazine.com, or I think it's .com, it's called The Illusion of Judgment. It's on, I think, page 40. And it gets spread all over the Front Range. I mean, it's the finest magazine here in Colorado for the Front Range. Try not to judge people. Because, I mean, whether it's the person who's fat, and you sit there and say, well, that person's fat, or they this, that, and the next thing, you put that negative energy in the world, and God only knows, every person who's has weight, you know, problems or challenges or obesity or whatever, Lord knows they got their own personal hell to go through. every time they look in the mirror, or every time they try to put on a, you know, some clothes, or they try to look nice or whatever. And so they're struggling too, and they don't need somebody judging them. So I try to look at everybody in a very positive way, and send the kind of energy that does good in the world instead of judgment energy. And I wrote that piece, and I hope a lot of, and actually I've gotten some emails back already from people thanking me that you've just taught me today to be a better person in the world by not judging others.
Well, you end up carrying that baggage around, so don't think you don't. It registers in you. It's negative.
Oh, it does. Oh, it really does. You know, once a preacher, he said he came on the front of the sermon, and he toted a bag of potatoes, and he said, you know, we all have the ability to make choices in this life, but if you're a person who likes to have judgment, or you're angry, or you hold a grudge, it's like a sack of potatoes, and if you keep finding fault in everybody, you keep putting more of those, you know, potatoes in your sack, and it gets heavier and heavier, but it also gets rotten. And so then the sack not only gets heavier, but it has odor. And he said, this sermon this morning, I would like to have you examine how many potatoes you're carrying around in your sack with the judgments and all the frustrations you might have, and you're putting it on other people, or you're angry because so-and-so is this or so-and-so is that. Here's what you can do. You can either take out these potatoes before they get rotten and let yourself have a lighter sack of potatoes, or at some point you simply drop all of the sack of potatoes and all the potatoes that are in that sack and free yourself, and then get down the road and learn that you don't have to carry a sack of potatoes, whether it's judgment, whether it's anger, or whether it's, you know, remembrances of anger toward your, you know, whomever did something bad to you in this life. You know, when people do bad things to me in this life, I just simply, I put them in the rearview mirror. You know, I bless their journey, and I say, okay, you're on a different journey, and we'll, you know,
moving
see you.
Ahead.
Yeah, just moving ahead.
Yeah, I have another way to look at the sack of potatoes metaphor. Mm-hmm. We're all like comets, and we end up acquiring a tail. And the bigger and longer that tail, the more it slows us down and drags us down. And to be able to turn around and cut that tail loose and fly free really liberates us, if we can do it. It's a wonderful way to go. And the potato thing is perfect. You're right. Think of a comet with a tail, too. That's another way to look at it.
Yeah, a comet with a tail. You know, and the one thing one thing about age, I mean, I still think I have I feel like a 21-year-old. I can't wait to the next adventure. I can't wait to jump in the pool and swim my half mile every day. I look forward to lifting my weights. I'm excited about a big backpack trip coming up where I backpack through the autumn colors to Magic Lake, where you can see the cutthroat trout
every
hit
year
the fly.
For us. Yeah, it's when you describe that, we can almost see it. So, do take some pictures of it if you can this time.
Oh, I can. Can you imagine walking through the aspen groves in late September at 10,000, 11,000 feet, and the path, the one-track path, is filled with gold aspen leaves. You're walking on a trail of gold. That's what we do. Every fall. I've been doing it all these years, for decades. Mm-hmm. Never get sick of it. Then you can go from Frisco 9 miles all the way to Breckenridge on a forest paved road for bicyclists and hikers. And the gold against the blue sky from the aspen along the way, we eat lunch there in Breckenridge, and everybody's celebrating a beautiful day. It's 70 degrees, blue skies, gold aspen, and the change of the seasons. Yeah, you can make something out of anything and everything, and you can make it beautiful by your choices. And you can create those choices whether you live in Michigan or in Oregon or in California or you in Maine or in Florida. It doesn't make any difference. It's what you make of where you are and what you have and how you look at it. And that really is, in the end, what makes your life beautiful.
Well, my friend, there are a lot of people out there who are very happy you're back. I just got another email. Happy Frosty is back. Hope he enjoyed the trip. Looking forward to his take on what's going on in Colorado. And it's just people care, and you do that to people. You've got the magic touch, as they used to say. So
thank you.
Welcome home. And Frosty is on this program twice a month for many, many years, and we always get into things that will help clarify the noise and the chaos out there that they are throwing at us 24/7. That's their game. Keep us self-obsessed, self-absorbed, and confused, and they win. That's what they like to do.
Yeah. We'll get more serious next time, Jeff.
That was beautiful. Thank you, Frosty. You take care.
You're welcome.
Say
God
hi
bless.
To Sandy. Okay.
I will.
All right, very
next
good.
Next time.
Thank you. The one and only Frosty Wooldridge is back, and will be back with another hour for you in just a few minutes. Hold on.